Chapter 37 Shinri 7 Shinri was soon to discover what her father had meant by King Avan's transformation. While the security at her room was not relaxed, she was given a couple of ladies-in-waiting to provide service and companionship. Their greatest contribution by far, however, was in the area of information. Shinri learned about the king's sudden and miraculous remaking from idiot to leader. Both of her ladies, young and low-born, found the king a dramatic figure. They spoke of his speeches before the citizens and lords, telling Shinri of his powerful voice and his commanding sense of honor. In just a few short days, King Avan had managed to unite two opposing armies, making friends of all three houses. Of course, her father had something to do with that. His sudden rise to first prince was absolutely remarkable. That was the word one of the girls used. Remarkable. She had to think for a moment before saying it, however, and Shinri could see the hushed rumors in her eyes. The girl wouldn't, of course, speak the rumors to Ilhadal's own daughter. Shinri could guess what was being said, however. People assumed that her father had subtly killed his way to the top, a fact that would greatly weaken his reputation. The men of Yarkaved believed strongly in the duel as an ultimate decider of disputes, and they found assassination a cowardly substitute. Still, Ilhadal was house leader. He was reportedly not accepting any personal duels, but instead sending challengers to his champions. He could survive, for a time, in such a manner. He would need to do something eventually to prove his legitimacy, but for the moment his loyalty to King Avan lent a stabilizing factor to the three houses. Rinar had pledged itself in alliance to Devar, and Devar had pledged itself to Vaidenel. It appeared that the squabbles amongst the three houses would instead become unification, a transformation no less amazing than the king's supposed remaking. This new image of King Avan was somehow more discomforting than the old one. The idiot Avan, at least, had been a stable component. Despite her unfamiliarity with him personally, Shinri had been certain she knew what she could expect. While the prospect of marrying a man with the mind of a child was unsettling, at least it was something she could make plans around and understand. The new Avan, the reborn and remade Avan, was unaccessible. What did one make of a man who was a mental invalid one day, then became a powerful leader and accomplished duelist the next? He provided just the kind of unpredictable element that Shinri had been carefully taught to avoid in her machinations. Unpredictability by its very nature cannot be trusted, or so Yasna had always said. Far better to choose the stable yet less efficient than to gamble on the excellent yet random. And yet, dared she hope? The ladies spoke of this man in such awed voices that it was impossible for Shinri not to share in at least a bit of their adulation. True, they were young, and true, Vaidens were a superstitious lot, but perhaps this man would live up to his budding reputation. Perhaps he would be a man like Lord Dalinar, strong, true, even loving. Shinri didn't meet the man she was to marry until the day of the wedding itself. After being stuck in her rooms for several weeks, waiting, the joy of being released was almost enough to wash away her nervousness. Her father had purchased for her an extravagant gown. Apparently his new position was providing him with the wealth he had coveted when she was a child. The garment was mostly white, embroidered with gold, Lord Avan's colors. She stood quietly, waiting as her ladies dressed her. A strange experience, since she was accustomed to being in their place. In a short while, I will be queen of the three houses. The thought was almost as dumbfounding as the concept of getting married. Her father soon arrived to inspect her. He looked out of place in his lavish costume, complete with a masterful cloak pinned back slightly at the side to reveal the lack of a sword at his waist, an ostentatious reference to his being a shard-bearer. Ilhadal regarded his daughter with a characteristically mercantile air.
"You'll do," he finally decided.
"You'd hate to think you spawned an inferior product, right, father?" Shinri thought angrily as the women finished her braids. "That's what it always was. You hated me because I came from you, because my imperfection was your own. Well, I'm glad you finally found your place. You're at the top now. I hope you go mad from the frustration of not having anyone left to pander to."
"It's a good thing this is a political union," Ilhadal noted, "because I doubt anyone would choose you otherwise. At least the dress is beautiful."
Shinri was already working at the threads on the inside of her oversized left sleeve, and she yanked one free just for him. She probably shouldn't have snapped back at him. Yasna would have waited. But her frustration needed an outlet, and she spoke. "How long do you think he'll let you live, once we're married?" she asked. The ladies paused, and Shinri could feel their embarrassed exchange of glances. Let them speak. Anything that undercut her father's authority served Shinri's purposes. Ilhadal glared at her.
"Leave us,"
he commanded the ladies. They did, leaving her alone in the cell of a room with her father.
"You will not speak of such things again," he commanded.
"Oh?" Shinri asked. "Should I not seek to warn my own father? Really, do you think that King Avon can afford to let you survive the wedding? The chance that you'll kill him quietly like you did the others is far too dangerous."
"Do not speak so to your father," he said, stepping forward as if to hit her.
Shinri remained firm. "You would strike your queen on the day of her wedding?" Ilhadal froze. "That's right, father," she said. "Queen, this is the place you've given me, and it is one over and above you. Of course, soon there will be few whose place isn't greater than your own."
"I was wrong again," he said with a snort. "That Colin woman fooled me. You haven't lost any of your impudence. You just put a fair cover over it."
"Tell me, father," Shinri said. "Have your noblemen been giving you gifts? Large sums, presented in quiet, as pledges of loyalty? Do they give you promises to follow and accept your leadership? Do they seem a little too eager to please?" He paused. Shinri studied him carefully. "You only have this one chip to play," she told herself. "Get as much from it as you can." "King Avon gives speeches often now," she guessed. "And oddly, he makes most of them before the troops. Your troops. Their loyalty was never really yours. It belonged to Tal Shekh. You are a poor substitute, a last-moment replacement for the man they admired. Your faction may have gained dominance, but only because of the Vaden sense of martial decorum. You were next in line, and that is the only reason they let you become first prince. Of course, there's one easy way to remove that problem. Take you out of the line and someone else can step up." Ilhadal looked dumbfounded.
"How do you know these things?" he demanded. "Your maids have been speaking. I told them to remain quiet about outside events."
"Avon and your own noblemen are already plotting your death, father," Shinri said, ignoring his comment. "They're waiting for the formality of a marriage, for they see the advantage of uniting two of the great houses. You had better tell your assassins to be quick. Once this marriage happens, you'll need to kill the king immediately."
"I would never," Ilhadal snapped. "I'd take up my own sword and strike him down first."
Ah, Shinri thought, reading his face. There was honesty in his anger. So you didn't do it then. Ilhadal Davar had not killed his kinsman. It was an oddly relieving revelation. There had been children among the 13 men ahead of him for the House Throne. It was a comforting thought to know that one's father did not murder children. But who, then? Could it really be a coincidence? 14 men, dead in a few months? All of the precise lines required to put my father on the throne? Then you're doomed, she said out loud. Even if the king doesn't kill you, you won't keep your place long. Your so-called supporters are only placating you while they gather strength. Everyone assumes you took the throne through deception. They'll give you money and private promises. True. But think about this, father. When you were a sycophant in the very court you now rule, did you give the largest gifts to the men you trusted and respected? Or did you give them to the men you wanted to lull? They'll begin presenting real challengers as soon as the wedding is finished, and eventually you won't be able to hide behind champions. No man can fight off an entire house. They'll bring you down eventually, one way or another. He was very nervous now. Her words had obviously shaken his confidence, and he tugged at his lavish clothing, as if seeing it anew.
How?
Shinri raised an eyebrow. Really, father, she noted dryly. You shouldn't have sent me to tutor under the greatest political mind of our time if you didn't want me to learn a few things. I can try and help you, once I am queen, but so far you have given me little encouragement to do so. Ilhadal snorted, eyeing her with a look that, she was satisfied to note, now contained a great deal more respect than it had before. Of course, he probably gives Crom more respect than he usually gives me.
We'll see, he finally said with a wave of his hand. The thing is, child, you don't know half of what you think you do. There's something greater than this all, something that will hold the noblemen together, and something that will make certain people respect me rather than whisper snidely behind me. Yes, if only you understood.
He smiled then, not realizing that in nibbling at her bait, he had given away far more than he expected. Shinri was missing a piece of it all, a bit more prodding, and she would know what it was. That prodding, however, would have to come after the wedding. The doors opened at her father's command, and her ladies rushed back in to put the final touches on her hair, then pick up her train. Soldiers waited at attention on either side of the hallway. They held their swords out, point down, tips touching the stone, and making a column of steel that led her way to the wedding chamber. Blessed Almighty, Shinri thought, her nervousness returning full force. I'm not ready for this. The ceremony, however, obviously didn't intend to wait until she was ready. Her father nodded for her guards to begin the escort, then hurried off to place himself at the front of the audience. Shinri walked slowly down the hallway, swords lining her on either side, feeling a numbness overtake the passion she had felt during the debate with her father. The last few weeks had been a different life, a dream. She didn't even know what had become of Alethkar. Had Yasna found the assassins? What of the tension between Jezenrosh and King Elokar? Yasna's own marriage to Meridas could very well have happened already, and if it hadn't, it would come very soon. I won't be able to return to that life, Shinri realized for the last time. My father was right. One way or another, my wardship is over now. I'm not the student anymore. I'm on my own. The doors to the wedding chamber opened, and she felt her first real hint of terror at what was about to come. She was too young. Most women were at least given until they were 18, even in political marriages. She didn't know enough, hadn't learned long enough. She couldn't even decide if she enjoyed noble society or was disgusted by it. She looked for something to break, scatter, or twist, but there was nothing. Her ladies continued to prod her forward, and the waiting crowd watched expectantly. She barely saw King Avon, standing in a sharp white uniform, showing none of the idiocy she had seen in him before. She wasn't certain how she kept walking, moving forward, until she stood before him. She knelt, taking her place on the cushion facing him. Only one line of thought kept her strong. He looks like a good man. If he really has spent all this time pretending, then he's clever too, and strong enough to keep his throne when everyone thought he would lose it for certain. He is handsome, now that his eyes are firm and intelligent. He's calm, too. He could be the man I've hoped for. His face was rigid. He gave her no smile, no look of encouragement as she knelt, but she shouldn't have expected one. This was a serious occasion, and all reports made him out to be a sober man. He didn't know her, but she would be his most powerful supporter. She would keep his throne for him, protect his interests, as Jasnah had so deftly taught her. He didn't realize it yet, but he was getting more than just a simple political union. Far more. The ceremony passed in a blur. A Vorin monk spoke some words. The crowd waited politely, and Shinri knelt demurely. At the end, King Avon Vaidenel reached down, palm forward, and she took his hand. The ceremony was over. The next few hours were a dazed mix of congratulations and feasting. Shinri wanted to speak with the man she had just married, but as the wedding feast began, she was almost immediately pulled away to the queen's table. Her table. Women who had barely been civil to Shinri during her visits to Vaidenar searching for Tethryn now jostled and vied for a chance to sit next to her. Shinri glanced toward the king's table, letting the women work their seating out amongst themselves. Avon Vaidenel reigned at his table with a commanding presence. He had the kind of charismatic aura that took skill and experience to produce. It was only then, sitting at the table, being served a meal she was too nervous to eat, that Jasnah's training finally kicked in. Why would he pretend to be an idiot for so long? Shinri thought suspiciously. What would it accomplish? She could think of several advantages. In recent centuries, House Vaidenel had been the weakest of the three houses, despite its possession of the throne. A strong king would have been subject to duels from the other house leaders, but by feigning idiocy, Avon would have been able to maneuver himself into a position of power before revealing himself. But what a gamble, Shinri thought, not certain whether to be impressed by his resourcefulness or skeptical of his fortune. How had he learned leadership skills when he had spent his days acting the imbecile? How could he be certain that even now he would have the necessary core group of loyal attendants to secure his rule? A popularity gained through sensationalism could be lost in a flash of poor luck. Shinri spent most of the meal pondering these issues. She was still more than a little stunned by the day's events. She was no longer Shinri, the child ward of Jasnah, but Lady Shinri, the woman queen of Vaidenar. Her logical ponderings about Avon were more a retreat to the familiar than they were an exercise of true rationality. By the meal's end, she had come to only one conclusion. Avon Vaidenel was a man of superior luck and skill. Great events would mark his reign, and she had to know what kind of man he was. The feasting ended, and within moments, Shinri found herself alone with him, a man she still didn't know, in his chambers. The wedding night was a thing she had barely let herself consider. This moment was to have belonged to Tethryn, That she should have to spend it with another seemed wrong, a violation of the love she had once held. "Tethryn is dead," Shinri told herself firmly. "You have to make a new life now." She stood quietly as Arvin closed the door to his bedchamber. "My lord," she said humbly, his back still to her, "though we are now husband and wife, I find that I barely know of you, let alone know you personally. What kind of man is it that I have married?" He didn't answer. In fact, he acted as if he hadn't heard her. He turned and began to disrobe with careful, almost emotionless functionality. He paused only once, looking up, his expression explaining that it was time for her to do what was expected of a wife. He took her quickly, without speaking. Resigned to her place as his wife, Shinri accepted it. Until she saw those eyes. Focused in the wan light above her, more powerful than the passion, pain, and confusion, were those eyes. She saw a depth of rage and anger within them, a hatred that made her want to curl up in horror. They were not the eyes of a lover. They were not the eyes of a noble lord. They were the eyes of a monster, released from their mask during those moments when all emotions became bare. Then she understood. He climbed off of her, stepping away from the bed, his face and motions returning to their previous level of control. Shinri sat back, shivering as she pulled the blankets up around her naked body. A sudden and sickening terror drove her. She wanted to hide from those eyes. "It was you," she whispered, silently enough that she was certain he wouldn't be able to hear her.
"What was me?" he asked firmly,
his voice oddly accented, his eyes focused on her face. "You," she repeated, "you killed them, or had them killed, the people in the succession line before my father. You assassinated them." And he smiled, a cold, terrible smile.
"Yes."
"Why?" she whispered.
King Arvin shrugged. "Your father was the only one ambitious enough to take the house throne, yet weak enough to hesitate when the time came to kill me and take my place."
He paused, looking at her and smiling again.
"And he was the only one with an unmarried daughter of age, or at least near enough."
The chill in Shinri's breast became ice, and it begged her not to ask the next question. Yet like an onlooker drawn to a scene of carnage, she could not stop herself. "But," she whispered, "I was engaged to another." Avon's smile deepened. "How?" she whispered.
"I'm amazed that you never noticed," Arvin said, continuing to dress. "The man, Tethryn, never loved you. Not really. He wanted my sister, Nanava, with the deep, foolish love men reserve for something unattainable. You should have paid more attention to the ballads he listened to. The Song of 100 Lovers, The Blessing of Minala, Windborn Fate. These are the songs of a hopeless romantic. All I had to do was promise him Nanava's hand, and he was willing to risk his honor, his life, everything. You see, Prince Tethryn could never have loved you. You were given to him freely."
"Numbness. Just let yourself be numb. No feeling. Don't think about what just happened. Don't think of that thing touching you." Arvin tossed her dress onto the bed, its fine sea silk now wrinkled.
"Put that back on."
Shinri didn't move. She couldn't. Arvin regarded her. He displayed no hints of anger as he walked to the door and threw it open. He pointed to the guards outside.
"You four," he said. Go and dress my wife.
Shinri felt her eyes widen in reflexive horror. He wouldn't dare.
Avan stepped over and ripped the blanket free from the bed, leaving her exposed.
Now, he snapped to the guards.
He would.
Despite the direct command, the guards stood uncertainly. Shinri reacted first, the air cold on her skin as she scrambled off the bed and picked up the dress. The guards eventually stepped forward, making perfunctory efforts at helping as she hastily, embarrassedly struggled to don the dress. She tried to ignore the faces poking in through the door, though she couldn't help blushing as they saw her nudity. The dress's tassels and exaggerated train made the dressing difficult, especially since the soldiers did their best to look anywhere but at her as they helped. As she finally got the dress to cover the more embarrassing sections of skin, Avan stepped forward, grabbing her chin and lifting her eyes from the floor to meet his.
Your father is a fool, he whispered. We both realize that. Now, we both also realize that I won't indulge spoiled women as he once did.
That was a mistake. It gave her a focus for her shame and anger. It let her see into those eyes again and gather what strength she had. When he released her chin, it remained held up.
Good enough, he told the guards.
Her dress was disheveled and improperly tied, but she was at least decent.
Come,
Avan said, both to her and the guards, as he strode from the room. Shinri followed, not because she was beaten, but because she knew there was no use to fighting at the moment. He had just proven his control. She couldn't fight him. Not yet. Her father joined the group as it strode down the palace hallways. He gave Shinri barely a look, though he did flush slightly at the sight of her with her hair unraveled and hanging freely, her dress rumpled.
What is this? Ilhadal asked. Why are the troops gathering outside? It's time for you to have your proof, Ilhadal,
Avan replied.
As promised, we begin our plans this afternoon. Now?
Ilhadal asked.
But the gate. Come,
Avan said simply. The shame of being forced to leave the palace and walk without a litter in her current state would have mortified the Shinri of a few hours before. Now the gawking citizens seemed like nothing.
He killed Tethryn, she thought. Somehow, Avan convinced Tethryn to ride to certain death, just so that I would be unengaged at the proper time. He found a way to slaughter the Devar line of succession so that my father would take the house throne. She had to keep a tight hold on her terror as they approached the Oathgate Dome, lest she begin to worry about what he would do next. Unpredictable indeed. Unpredictable and terrible. Soldiers were gathered inside the city. This was odd enough to give Shinri pause. She had expected there to be an army outside the city, for she had heard some minor explanations of how Tal Shekh's force was now commanded by the idiot king. But these men were inside the city itself, thousands of them, spearmen, swordsmen, and archers, standing in neat ranks, waiting for something. Avan led her past the rows of men toward the Oathgate Dome. Inside the red-painted structure waited another squadron of soldiers. These men wore blue uniforms. Aleth uniforms. Shinri couldn't contain a laugh. That's why you kept me imprisoned, she realized. You think to take Ral Aram. You feared my loyalties to House Colin.
Her father started, but Avan acted as if he hadn't even heard the comment. The king walked forward, inspecting the blue-uniformed troops.
You won't get through the gate, Shinri said, catching the king's eye. King Elokar isn't that great a fool. The gates are locked from the Aleth side, except when there are plenty of troops present.
Avan didn't respond, but instead turned back to his inspection.
This? Shinri asked of her father. This is what you were preparing for? This is your great plan? You think the Aleths aren't aware of the danger the Oath Gates provide? You won't be able to go through until they decide to open their end, and they're always wary of an attack when they do so. You'll never take the city this way.
Her father shifted uncomfortably.
He says he has a way to open the gates even if one side is locked,
Ilhadal mumbled weakly. Shinri laughed.
Then he is the idiot king after all.
A hand grabbed her neck.
You can do this, with or without the dress on, my queen,
Avan whispered in her ear.
You may choose. If you say another word this day without first being told to do so, I will take it as a sign that you've decided to give the men a show.
Shinri flushed, and Avan pulled her by the neck over to the Oath Gate. He paused for a moment, eyes deep with concentration, and she thought she saw him take a breath, as if in preparation for some great task, or some great gamble.
Touch it, he said,
nodding to the large opal set in the side of the Oath Gate.
What?
Shinri asked. He nodded to the opal again.
Touch it, he commanded.
Shinri sighed and reached out to the shimmering, palm-sized stone. Everything stopped. It was as if 100 different pathways suddenly opened to her. An offering, made before her fatigued conscience, sudden and amazing refreshment, pure and beautiful fulfillment of problems she hadn't known she had. Distant locations appeared, not actual images, but tantalizing offerings, things formless yet encouraging. Just walk, go, find us, leave. Through the images and longing, she somehow saw a haze of white mist stream down from the top of the Oath Gate, obscuring its center and indicating that it had been opened. Avan pushed her away from the gate, and her link was broken. Suddenly she couldn't remember what she had sensed or seen, and was left only with a hurtful desire.
What? What was that?
Avan spun, smiling broadly and waving his hand toward the Oath Gate.
Well,
he demanded of the stunned guards and collected noblemen.
Get moving!
Shinri stood quietly as the soldiers in blue rushed forward, piling through the now open Oath Gate.
Secure the palace, Avan ordered. You must not let anyone out to raise warning. Kill any you see. I don't care who they are. The future of the three houses depends on your courage. A living servant is one who can escape and warn King Elokar, an event that would result in the deaths of yourselves and your brother soldiers.
Shinri stumbled away, but a guard caught her, holding her by the shoulders as Avan continued to encourage the men to their grisly task. He would massacre the entire palace staff just to keep his invasion secret. He was worse than a monster. He was a thing for which Shinri had no words.
And I'm married to him.
Yasna would probably tell her to stay with him. The position of power as Avan's wife would, in Yasna's eyes, provide the greater opportunity to protect lives and keep Alethkar safe. Though Avan seemed harsh, he had enjoyed bedding her. She could use that against him, forcing him to spare lives and be merciful.
But I am not, Yasna.
The revelation came as if a stark and sudden break in the clouds.
And I never will be.
She would be right. Staying with him would serve the most good. It is the logical and perhaps moral choice. But I cannot do it. The first time he had come to her, she had accepted him, but she hadn't known. Never again. If he took her again, she would fight, She looked up, studying the grim satisfaction in Avon's eyes. It had been a long time since she had felt hatred, and it had never been this strong. There was only one thing to do. The roads called to her. The outside. The freedom. She would escape.